Blog Talk Radio.
When Jesus was here on earth, he spoke two languages, mostly Aramaic and some Hebrew. And isn't that kind of interesting that some 2,000 years later, we're still talking about him in a language that wasn't even in existence at the time? Something to think about. You know, he made himself of no reputation. He was born in a stable where animals reside. He slept in animal feeding dishes. He was raised in an ill-considered town where it was often asked, can anything good come from Nazareth? Much like Compton, Watts, or some other ghetto or barrios around the world. Does that seem to make a difference? Good day, greetings to all. My name is Rose Hart, and welcome to If These Things Be So. We would like to thank you for giving us some of your day to listen to some of the concepts and precepts of the Christian Bible. We talk about the God of the Bible, and we discuss how things in the Bible pertain to us as we live in this world today. We would like to thank you, and we would like to remind you that this is an open-air program. We would love to hear your comments, your questions, or any concerns that you have pertaining to the discussion today, or anything else that may be on your mind. If you would like to ask for prayer, if something that you would just like to discuss in general, we would love to hear from you, and we encourage you and invite you to participate and be an active part in the discussion this day. Also, if you have any particular questions or comments or topics that you would like to be discussed personally, please let us know. You can let us know at ifthesethingsbeso@gmail.com, or you can text us at 319-471-3074. That's 319-471-3074. And if you're listening via internet, please dial in 657-383-0361. We would love to hear from you, and we thank you. As I asked right before, can anything good come from something that is thought of as not so good? Can anything good come out of Compton, California? You know, the city that's known for gangs and rappers. If you're not a gang member or you're not a rapper, do you stand a chance in the world in which we live? Or, as some people are labeled, are they labeled and stigmatized for the rest of their days? Well, that's what happened with Jesus. He was labeled and stigmatized, but yet it didn't stop him. He kept on and kept on to be one of the most renowned figures in all of history. You know, according to certain publishing companies and accounting companies, the Bible, the Christian Bible, is considered the most sought after and the most purchased book of all time, including fiction and nonfiction. I wonder what that is. But also closely behind is the Guinness World Book of Records, the writings of Mao Zedong, and the Quran. So what is it about these writings that draw people to want to know and continue to read and continue to purchase and continue to study? It has to be something quite important. These books just don't happen to be bestsellers for centuries and centuries. There has to be something that's going on that make people want to know and learn and maybe to have a standard to live by. And before we continue on, I would like to take a moment to congratulate all our summer graduates this year, all our 2015 graduates. Congratulations to you. We admire your accomplishments that you have made throughout all these years, your stamina, your endurance, your encouragement. You're encouraged, all you have done, and we'd like to say thank you for a job well done. You just closed one chapter of your life, and you're beginning to open another one. And at If These Things Be So, we would like to thank you and wish you the very best as you continue the pursuit of your life. Congratulations. We have a American entrepreneur and business investor by the name of Warren Buffett. And he is consistently ranked as one of the wealthiest men in the world. And he is known for saying, reading is the best way to gain knowledge without you having been there, which makes sense. And that's probably why these books are on the top-selling list of all time consistently. Our scripture reading for today is taken from the book of Psalms, Psalm 37. And I would just like to read a little bit of it to introduce our topic for today. And it reads, Psalm 37, verse 1 starts, "Never envy the wicked." And the wicked here is translated as those who have a lifestyle of doing wrong, where that's all they think about is doing wrong. So it tells us to don't envy them. Soon they will fade away like grass and disappear. But trust in the Lord instead. Be kind and good to others. Be delighted with the Lord, then he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him to help you to do it, and he will. Your innocence will be clear to everyone. He will vindicate you with blazing light, just shining like the sun. Rest in the Lord. Wait for him patiently. Do not be envious of others. Stop your anger and turn off your wrath. We know sometimes we have to deal with the problem of envy and jealousy, and that can be sometimes a hard thing. And one of the barriers of being concerned for other people is that we envy them. You know, we want what they want. We want to do what they want to do. And envy has an element of desire, but when we experience it, it has an advantage or benefit. See, envy is not always bad. You know, you want to happen to you what happened to them doesn't necessarily make it envious. For example, she got an A on her test. I want an A on my test. There's nothing wicked or evil about that. Not at all. We have role models. We want to be like them. And that's okay as long as we don't take it to the extreme where we are willing to do harm and do evil to achieve what someone else has achieved or, you know, get what someone else has gotten. There's no harm in any of those things until it becomes troublesome where you're causing harm or injury to others. And, you know, you hear it all the time. You hear your children all the time. How come? How come? Why? Why can't I have that? Why can't I go? How come she gets to go? We hear that all the time. And why is that? And is there a distinction? Are there rules? Are there stipulations as to why you can have and I can't have, why she can have and he can't have? Your children ask you that all the time. Why does she get to go to the party and I can't? Well, maybe for one thing you weren't invited. Maybe for another thing this party is too old for you. Maybe for one thing you're not old enough to go. And we don't think about those things. We just think she gets to have it, so I should have it too. He gets to go, so I should be able to go. Just because he gets to go, I should go. No thought of anything else. That's not fair. That's not fair. And we often think that even as adults. Why does she get a raise? She comes to work late. Why does he get to get off early? He came in late. You know, we don't know circumstances all the time. We don't know all the requirements all the time. We just think they get to have, so I should have. Just because you have it, so I should have it. And there are some things that may hold true in that case, but you rarely hear this. She got punished and lost her phone, so I should too. We don't hear that from our children too much. Okay, Dad, you took Susie's phone, so you can take mine too. No. Even if they're both guilty of the same offense, they're still not going to say, okay, you took my. Rarely would you hear that. Okay, he got fired, so fire me too. That's not said often. Just because he's fired, you fired him, you may as well fire me too. That's not the way life works, and that's not the way individuals usually work. Even if they are guilty of the same offense, that person is hoping they won't get fired too. I don't want to get fired just because she got fired. And so we fail. We make comparisons when it fits. We fail all the time to think about the situation as it is. You know, back in the day, people were stoned for what we may consider nowadays as trivial. You know, they got stoned for lying. They got their tongues cut out for lying. Well, you know, you may have not committed a murder. You may have not stolen. You may not have committed adultery. You may not have been a bad person per se. But you have lied. All of us have lied at one time or other in our life. We may not have done all those other things in actuality, but we've all lied, whether big, little, white, small, the little white lie, whatever it is. We're all guilty of that. There's not one person in this world, I'm talking about babies, that hasn't come to that point where they had to lie. Or, as we call it, stretch the truth. We still have our tongues. We would think that would be so barbaric if we got caught lying and our family takes us to the authorities. Okay, now get in the chair. We're going to cut your tongue out because you lied. And we're going to make sure you never do that again. What about that comparison? Our society doesn't do that. You know, our society doesn't, that person, dig a pit, lower them down into the pit to where only their head is showing, and throw stones until that person is dead. We don't do that. And that was a custom of that time and how inhumane that may seem. There is nothing you can do. You're not standing up against a wall where you can cover your head with your arms or lay in a fetal position. You are just an open target. And you're going to take every stone that comes your way until the life is out of you. Back in the day, people were also killed if they talked about their leader, their king, or any of those in authority over them. If they were caught talking about one of their leaders or one of their superiors, they were killed. Compare that to us today. We can talk about our leaders till the cows come home. We can talk about them in public. We can blog about them. We can write about them. We're on the news, the radio. We can say whatever we want to say about our leaders. And it's okay. You have the right to speak. You have a right to assemble. And see, so we have to be careful of what we really want and how we really want it. Because if we compare to what they did, we contrast to what we do now to what they got severely punished for, there is really no comparison. If you were to take a poll, would you rather have that type of form of punishment or our form of being able to speak? I'm sure most people would take our form right now without question. But yet and still we compare. People always compare. If a person was running for president of the United States, and he spent much of his time, devoted much of his effort and lots of money to become the next president, had good politics, a good platform, and he lost, even though he thought he was better than his opponent, even though he had better policies, even though he had a better running mate, he probably would lie awake at night and just be seething inside himself that he didn't win. It didn't pan out the way he thought. And he may feel he devoted all his time, effort, energy, and money for nothing. It went nowhere. Sometimes we think that. We spend time, effort, and energy, money, and things don't work out the way we think. You have a child that's chronically sick all the time. Every time you turn around, week after week, your child is sick. And you think you're living a good life, which you are, and your neighbors are running rampant, and there no one in their family ever sits. Never. And you kind of think, maybe, what's going on? I try to live right, I try to do right, and I'm having all this trouble. You know, you're second string on the sports team, basketball, baseball, football, soccer, hockey, whatever it is, you're second string. You believe you're good. You believe you have better talent. You always say, well, if that was me, I would have shot it this way. If that were me, I know I could have swung and hit that ball. But yet you're sitting on the bench. How do you feel? You just warm the bench all the time and you never get to play, and you know yourself you're better than he is. You're better than she is. How do you feel? You know, there may be some little bits of envy right there, not to the point where it's dangerous, but yet there's still some hidden traces of, I should be playing and not her. Why can't they put me in? What about the person that buys one lottery ticket and wins the whole thing, and you've been buying lottery tickets for years. What do you think about that? I spent hundreds of dollars trying to win the lottery, and this person spends $1 and wins the jackpot of, what, $275 million. What are the odds? How do you feel about that? So what do we do? What do we do? And that's why there are so many opportunities for envy, so many opportunities that have come about from comparing and contrasting what others do or may do, what others have or may not have, what others get or may not get. We're always looking at what others do. And always, it's always, like I said, it's always the good things. We don't want to envy the bad things. You know, that would be kind of silly to do that anyway. So we find ourselves wanting what others have because it's good, it's nice. It's not always bad. It's good, it's nice. Why not have these nice things? Why not be able to share in good fortune? You know, and so we have warnings. And I'm going to make a general assumption here, and I'm going to assume that most of you listeners, if not all, agree that we shouldn't be envious. You know, the Bible tells us over and over and over and over and over not to be envious. You know, in Psalms and Proverbs and Galatians and Peter in his writings, they all say don't be envious. And being envious is not a Christian characteristic per se. Only Christians don't be envious. Only nice people don't be envious. This is a universal problem that affects everyone throughout the ages, throughout the times, throughout the places. So, since the Bible is telling us not to be envious, and it goes against what the Bible teaches, what do we do? You know, this is serious business because envy can cause problems, real serious problems. And callers, let me know. Let me know if you've ever been in an envious position, not to tell on yourself, but just to relate an experience. If someone has envied you for the things you have, or if you envy someone else for the things that they have. You know, I've envied a lot of things, a lot of people. You know, I've told you many times that I would love to be a Bible scholar. I would love to be a theologian. I would love to be everything I study, I'm just brilliant at. I would love it. Love it, love it, love it. But you know, all the work that it takes. And it seems like the more I study, the more I see I don't know. Wow, that's a contrast. You think you're studying and studying and studying, you're learning everything, you find out you don't even know that. You know, I used to, wow, look at that dress. That's so cool. Maybe I might. But then I think about, oh, no, I'm not going to look good in that. No. You know, you have to have the right figure. You have to have the right physique. Ooh, look at her haircut. Oh, it looks so good. I try to wear that. Oh, my goodness. I need to wear a hat every day. So envy is not specifically geared to anybody. You know, look at that car. That's nice. I would love to have a car like that. You know, I don't want to drive around in a bucket every day. It would be nice to drive in a nice car, a newer model. Nothing wrong with that, but when I go try to steal her car so I can have it, there's trouble. when I'm mean and mad and angry at everybody because I don't have a brand new car, there's trouble. So I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to envy, as long as you can keep it in proper perspective. And if you feel like sharing a story, I would love to listen. I would love to hear, and maybe I can learn from your experiences. Because we all go through these things at one time or other in our lives. So what do we do? You know, we keep on envying and envying and envying to the point where we're distracted. We begin to shipwreck our own life. We begin to shipwreck our faith. We begin to lose credibility in ourselves. You know, it's not a good thing. And the Bible can teach us how to not do that. You know, we compare and contrast. We compare, when we just read Psalms 37, we can compare envy with trust and contrast envy with delight and compare envy with a commitment and contrast envy with trust and trust and trust and trust. Trust what? Trust who? Trust yourself? Trust God? Trust the situation that it will get better, that it will change for the better? You know, these are positive things. And we have to remember in this world, from past discussions, it's not a pleasant place all the time. It's not a nice place all the time. It's not a good place all the time. With all due respect to everyone, we can see from our own experiences that it's not nice all the time. It's not nice all the time, but we can be nice all the time. It's not fair all the time. Life is not fair, but we can be fair all the time. We can be fair. It takes effort, commitment, it takes trust, and it takes us to delight, not only in God, but to delight in ourselves, of our accomplishments, of our potential, of our goals. So we don't want to lose sight because of situations and circumstances and happenings that aren't always pleasant. What do you do? What do you do? You know, there's always hope. There's always hope. Even against hope, you can still hope. You know, one time there was, sometimes it's easier to relate a situation or relate a story or take a Bible verse and turn it into a story where it would have more meaning and make better sense to what's going on. And there is a Bible verse, and everybody's very familiar with it. It's found in John chapter 6, and basically what it is, Jesus was preaching to the multitudes, and it was getting later in the day, and the people were getting hungry, and even Jesus himself was getting hungry. And so the apostles were saying, where are we going to get food to feed all these people? It's more than 5,000 men here, not even counting the women and children. Nobody has any food. It's late. We're far away from the marketplace. And even if we did, we wouldn't have enough money to feed all these people. But there was one little boy who had his lunch. He was smart enough to bring his lunch. How's that? But anyway, he packed his lunch, and he had 2 little fish and 5 little loaves of bread. So he was going to be full that day. And someone had noticed, one of the apostles had noticed that he had that. And so Jesus told the apostles, have him bring it to me. Now come here. And the little boy said, well, this is all I have. You know, what good is this? This is not going to do any good for anybody. This is barely going to keep me full. But if you want it, I'll give it to you. And so we all know the story that Jesus took the bread and the fish. He prayed over and blessed it. And it multiplied, where all the people, including men and women, over 5,000 people, were fed and full. And as the story continues, after everyone had eaten and was full, there were 12 baskets of food left. 12 full baskets of food left. So you kind of wonder, what does that mean? What did it mean that 12 baskets of food were left? Well, of course, theologians argue over that and come up with all kinds of answers. But why in particular 12 baskets? And my summation would be that there was one basket for each of those doubting apostles. It was enough for them to see what God could really do. And it makes sense. It might not be the right answer, but it seems to make sense that all these people that walk with Jesus, think about it. These men walked with Jesus for 3 years. They ate with him, slept with him, listened to him, learned from him, talked with him. And they still didn't understand who he was. They still didn't understand what he was all about. So where do you think that leaves us? This some 2,000 years later, we're still talking about him, and the people that were right there with him had no clue. What does that do for us? Well, it kind of makes us wonder, man, we better start studying more, start praying more, start inquiring more, start researching more to find out if these things be so. Because it kind of makes sense. If you are apprenticed to someone and you still don't know what's going on, something's wrong. Because remember, back in the day, that's all we had. We had apprentices for whatever discipline in life. There was a mentor. There was an apprentice that learned. And once you learned and you got the approval of your master, you could go out and do whatever that discipline was. You didn't need to go to school, per se. You didn't need to be on probation and be checked out anymore. You were approved. And so it didn't take until Jesus died that these apostles really began to open their eyes and see what's what. And this story kind of makes you think that Jesus can take your little bit, because that's all we have in comparison. We just have five little pieces of bread and two fish, that he can take our little bit and make it into more and make it into abundance and make it until we're running over. And that's usually the purpose of what Scripture has to tell us in whatever area. In love, in forgiveness, in kindness, in endurance, and in stamina, in whatever you need for that hour can be taken care of by just giving your little bit. Because the Bible says that, you know, he'll take our little bit and multiply it, which we just saw. And that's why the Bible is full of addition and multiplication. Multiply, replenish, add on, add to. There's very little about subtraction and very little bit about division. And yes, there is math in the Bible. There is math. A lot of times we don't think about it, but it's in there. So compare and contrast addition,
with subtraction, multiplication with division. And you know, when you multiply, it grows. It grows and grows and grows into exponential numbers. And that's what Jesus can do. Now, whether we allow him or permit him, that's a different story. Whether we believe that to be so is a different story, because so many times we doubt. We just look at surface circumstances. I don't have this. My child is sick. I don't have any money. You know, we have to hold God to his own standard. Okay, God, you said you would supply all my needs. I need my water bill paid. It's true. And many times we go without, because the Bible says you have not because you ask not. Now, I'm not saying God is at our beck and call where we can just, okay, God, I need this, take care of it. You know, we don't just rest in the Lord. Okay, Lord, get busy. And a lot of us think that. You know, God has his part, but we also have our part. And then there are times when God says, no, wait, later on. You know, same like we tell our kids, no, you can't have any candy, wait till after dinner. And after dinner comes, and maybe you get it, maybe not because you're so full. Or maybe you know, whatever the circumstances are. But that's the way God works, because we know he's in a fatherly relationship that we can understand. And as we begin to mature and grow, we know these things because we read and studied them. If we don't know the promises of God, how can we hold them to it? How can we tell God, we can give God back his own words? You wrote this, you said this, you said I don't have because I didn't ask. You said you would take care of all my needs, and here I am hungry. What's up with that? Hold him to his promises, because he's very particular about his promises. He says so. You know, he says, I swear by myself. Ooh, that's something. If you can swear by yourself that you are that good, and that's how we should be able to. Our words should be that good that we can swear by ourselves. But yet and still, we break promises. We break commitments. You know, we commit to marriage, and 2 years later, we're finished. Months later, we're finished. Days later, we're finished. What is that? Were we committed to life and death and all that, sickness and health? No, I can't take care. I can't live with you because you developed this condition, and I can't take care of you the rest of your days. I got to get out and live my life. Compare and contrast your life to my life now. Adios. Not good. Our word should be as good as perfect. I'm not talking about certain circumstances that prevent that. You know, you promised to cut somebody's yard and you got sick and you couldn't do it. Oh, come on. We're talking about your word in general, where everybody knows that when you say something, you're going to follow through. You're going to be honest about it if something should come up where you can't. We have to grow with integrity and honesty. Compare integrity to nothingness. Our lives should be impeccable as far as commitment, as far as keeping what we say we'll do. What are we going to do? And another way to stop being envious is to exhibit more love. Be happy when your coworker gets a raise, even though you didn't. Be happy
when your neighbor gets a brand new car and when your neighbor buys brand new furniture and yours is falling apart, raggedy and broken down. Be happy when your family can eat steak and you're eating ramen. That's hard to do, believe me. It's hard to do. You get tired of ramen after a while. You only have two flavors, chicken and beef. After a while, you get kind of tired of it. While you think in your head that while they're having steak and baked potatoes and sour cream, and they're having lasagna and just on and on and on. It can get very hard. And we can become very bitter and resentful and angry. I don't want to talk to you. I have nothing to say to you. Leave me alone. Just go over there and eat your steak and leave me alone. And then it even gets worse because your neighbor or your family member knows you don't have it. They know while they're still eating their steak, while they're still scarfing on luxurious cheesecake, and you're lucky if you get a Twinkie, if you get a Twinkie. And then yet and still, you don't even think about the people that have less than you do. Little kids in school throwing away lunches and the free breakfasts that are offered in school, and that's the only meal some children have. We don't think about that. Compare ourselves to that. Let them take our place where we don't have anything but the breakfast and lunch that's offered at school. And God forbid the weekend. God forbid the weekend when they don't even have an opportunity to eat. And we're complaining about ramen? Do you see how this compare and contrast? Because comparison and comparing can be very dangerous. It can be, and I keep reiterating that because compare, we can bring trouble to ourselves and to others. Has anyone ever done that where they're causing trouble to others? Where they got so distraught that they wanted to do harm to others? We hear about this stuff all the time on the news where people are doing harm to themselves and others, and then after the story unfolds, they didn't get a raise at work. They felt cheated at work. They felt, look at the kids that, remember the Columbine back in the day where the kids shot up the school and so many died? Where they were being talked about and taunted, and how the perpetrators felt bad that they weren't in the in crowd. They weren't the jocks. They weren't the kids that everybody looked at and looked up to. They were the nerds. You know, and depending on your perspective, it's kind of cool to be a nerd. A lot of people come to you to help them out. They really need you. They may not like you. They may not want you to be around, but they still need you. I need you to do my homework. I need this assignment done. You're noticed, but you're just not noticed in the way you want to be noticed. And sometimes you're actually looked over. But when we compare and contrast ourselves to others, we're going to probably not be so happy. When we compare ourselves to precepts in the Christian Bible, we're going to notice that we probably are falling short. So there's a difference between falling short and being mad and angry. You know, we can be mad and angry at ourselves that we got to do better, we have to do better, we must do better. And not just because the Bible says so, which that's reason enough,
but for our own growth, our own self-esteem. I'm not any lower because I don't have what you have. I'm not any better because you don't have what I have. And once we can see past these stumbling blocks, how better our world would be, how better our community would be, how better neighbors would be toward one another. Competition is always good. Friendly competition is always good. It helps us to better ourselves. It helps us to work harder. It helps us to improve. That's great. That's great. When I'm doing better to tear you apart, when I'm scheming and devising ways to destroy you so that I can look good, how many times we have that at work? How many times do we have that at school where we malign our coworkers to make us look good, where we hurt others to make us look good? Remember that there was a movie on television. I think it was a Tyler Perry movie. And she was a lawyer, and she tried to trump up charges and cases and make the sentences longer than should be so that she could move up to district attorney. I forgot the name of the movie. But that's real life. That happens in real life. That's just not movie stuff. We find ourselves or find ourselves in situations where that actually happens to us. And God forbid we're trying to do it to somebody else. And it's a question that we should ponder. Do I want to hurt others that I might look good? You're going to look good on your own effort anyway. As long as you give your best, put forth your best, don't turn in slipshod, half done, half baked work. Be proud about what you do. Be proud about what you do. And I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm talking about genuine pride in what you have, in what you own, in what you can do. That's what's important. As our time winds down, I would like to conclude with another story. It's in the Bible, but I want to paraphrase to make it make more sense. After Jesus was crucified and buried and he rose, when he appeared to his apostles, and he appeared first to Peter, because remember before Jesus was crucified, Peter denied him. He denied him three times that he knew him because he was scared. Oh, that's Peter. That's one of his disciples. Let's get him too. Well, of course he was scared. So he denied Jesus on three different occasions. That night, that very night. And so when Jesus rose, he came to Peter and asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And of course, Peter said yes. Then Jesus asked him again, "Peter, do you love me?" He said yes. So Jesus asked him a third time, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter got kind of upset. "Well, Lord, yes, I love you. I told you I loved you two times. Now you want me to say it three times," but had forgotten how he had denied three times. So Jesus was just making that three equal three now and cancel it out. So as Jesus was talking to him, Jesus told him that he was going to die the same death that he did. And as Jesus was talking to Peter, John comes walking up, and Peter says to Jesus, "Well, what about him? What about him? You tell me I'm going to die like this, and so what about him?" So Jesus says, "Well, what about him? What I say to you, I say to you. Don't worry about what I said to him." "Well, why are you telling me and you're not telling him?" So Jesus finally says, "What does that have to do with you? I'm dealing with you right now. I'll deal with him when I deal with him. And that's how we think all the time, our kids. We tell our kids, one child, okay, you have to do dishes, and you have to do it well. And then the other child says, well, what about her? She didn't do hers right. Why, you know? And so that's where the problem is. When we understand what does that have to do with me, if it concerns someone else, and you're not, we usually call that, you know, sticking your nose into somebody else's business, being concerned about everybody else. You're always in everybody else's business but your own. We hear that all the time. So if we can keep it in our mind, what does that have to do with me, then we should just leave it alone. And see, Jesus was very blunt and he was very harsh. Leave it alone. It doesn't concern you. Peter thought it did. Well, I'm going to die. We're both apostles. He's with you. I'm with you. We're all together. Don't you think he should be in on this too? You know, don't we think that way? You know, he got a raise. I got to get one too. You know, we always have to be in the mix, as we say today. Always got to be in the mix. Not even talking to you. Not even talking about you. And here you are. And that's how we begin to start being envious and concerned where we don't need to be, which can cause troubles. So if we stick to our business that concerns us, and we follow Jesus like he told Peter, what does that concern you? Well, how does that concern you? Just mind your own business and follow me. Don't care what he's doing. And that's where we need to be. We need to be where we can be about our own business and the Lord's business to keep ourselves free from falling deep into envy. Because Peter could have done that. Well, he gets to do whatever, and you had me doing this, and this. And see, these stories in the Bible are so real. They pertain to us right now. How would you think that a Bible lesson to some thousand years ago pertains you at your job right now today? Or pertains to you right now with your next door neighbor? Or pertains to you and your classmates? Because it does. And maybe that's one of the reasons why the Bible is one of the best sellers. Because it has truth and precepts and concepts that pertain to us right now in the natural. You know, the Bible is not a bunch of voodoo, spiritual, and I'm being respectful, things that fall out of the sky. People do believe what they believe, and they have that right. And the Bible tells us to respect that. But certain concepts in the Bible pertain to every individual that ever was, that ever is, that ever shall be. And so we need to understand how to deal with situations and problems and experiences that come our way are hurtful, that don't make sense at the time, that can cause a lot of drama and harm. And you know, the Bible tells us that love cures everything. It really does when you think about it. When a person does you harm and comes up and apologizes, that makes it better, and it gets better over time. When that person vows to do something and they do, That makes things better. So we need to begin to limit our comparisons when it's in a negative way. When comparisons can bring about good, when they can bring about success, when they can bring about improvement, when they can bring about a work ethic, sure, compare. You're still an individual. You are still in charge of your own thoughts and your own actions. And so when we think on these things, we can find that they will be so. Things are not always easy, but they can be overcome with love and patience and trust in the Lord. And that's all he's asking us to do, to trust him. And he even says, check it out. Check me out. Test me. Taste and see if I'm not good. Taste and see if I'm not true. Think on these things. As the week continues on, and you're with your family and your classmates and your coworkers and your neighbors, think about it. Am I going to be envious of them because I just have to have what they have? Or am I envious to the point that I'm happy for them and they have given me an example that I might want to follow? Think on these things. I see that our time has wind down. I am so happy that you spent some time with us today at If These Things Be So. And I would like to encourage you to think about, when I'm envious, am I envious for good or am I envious for harm? Have a blessed week. Have a happy week. Be kind to yourself and be kind to others. Until next time, my name is Rose Hart for If These Things Be So. Stay blessed and healthy. Goodbye.